saving money on your next project now at Menards. Don't let an outdated garage door define your home. Revamp your home's appearance with a new Ideal Garage Door. Choose from our large in-stock selection or design your own using our free Garage Door Designer. Hurry in and save big money on your next project. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back for another episode with Ronnie and I. Yeah, Ronnie jumped the gun a little there. You seem pretty eager. I'm also pretty eager to discuss this week's rugby. But before we get into that, Ronnie, this week's episode is brought to you by the Rugby Ball Light SA. You can reach them on rblsa.co.za to get your own Rugby Ball Light, or join us on Super Brew and stand a chance to win one of three balls if you finish in the top. Now, I just have to mention that Ronnie is one prong short of a full plug. So I must just correct him from last week. The Rugby Ball Light actually comes with a three-prong plug, not a two. So Ronnie was a little off the mark there last week, much like he is with the Super Brew picks.
Insult me and I expect me to jump in here and add to what you're saying. So I'm a little bit disappointed because you told me to tell everybody it's got two points. I'm a little bit hurt, right?
It's fine. I will take the flack for that one then, Ronnie. I'll admit to that. But yeah, how's the week going so far? Chuffed to be working from home considering the price of petrol, hey? I just filled up my car now. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, so last week I was in the bush, in the Lowveld of South Africa. This week I'm back at Gauteng after coming up to watch the Springboks on the weekend. You know, we've just been told we can work the rest of the week from home and we'll only be going to the office from Monday onwards. So yes, saving a little bit of money with respect to fuel. Can't complain.
Yeah, and then we're going to go and spend all that money on fuel driving down to Bloemfontein this weekend. It's all about balance there, Ronnie, and I think it's going to be worth it to watch the box. So should we dive right into Saturday's antics, eh?
Past Saturday or the Saturday coming up? Because I can see antics on both ends.
That's definitely true, but let's look back a little bit to the Springboks beating Wales 32-29 at Loftus. We were there with some friends and family. Lack a vibe in the stadium. Full stadium, except for the boxes. Weak on whoever owned those boxes. But yeah, how lack a was it to be back at the stadiums, Ronald?
I think we just have to clarify that when you get box tickets, you don't necessarily sit outside. And so I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt that they were all standing around the bar inside drinking their beers and eating their biltong. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. The game itself was, or the actual event, was incredible. It's obviously the first time that we've been to the game in a very long time. I can't actually do the math. I mean, is it 3 years since we last watched a game?
Yeah, so I actually posted it on our Instagram. It was 1,050 days on the dot since we last watched the Box play, and you and me were at that game. It was at Loftus as well.
Back then, they didn't allow alcohol in the stadium. You couldn't drink a beer at your seat. And now we're world champions and you could go into the stadium and you can get yourself a beer. I just thought it was a little bit tricky with, you know, 51,000 people there to try and get hold of a beer. The queues were everywhere getting into the gates. So the various stadiums and their personnel need a little bit of practice, I think.
Yeah, and streamlining the process. But I thought, you know, most of the people had managed to get in by kickoff. I think getting out the stadium was quite a challenge. Yeah, great to have so many fans back. Yeah, you could feel the vibe. You could feel the atmosphere. I really, really enjoyed seeing all those people, that Mexican wave, the fireworks. It was lekker. But a special shout out to the announcer for this game because he really made me laugh in the stadium. When, for those of you that weren't in the stadium, they were introducing the players one by one. You know, they come on the TV and he'll be like, Malcolm, we'll leave you with Marks. You know, and see a Baldi Polisi Kulisi. And I really, really enjoyed that. I thought that was quite funny.
Yeah, no, that was absolutely well done. I mean, he introduced the Welsh team and basically listed off the names. You know, when he got to the Springboks, every single player, you know, had a little something said about them. You know, like you say, Malcolm will definitely leave you with some marks and a lot of puns in there. So us as the punter team were thoroughly enjoying that. But it was exciting. It was an explosive atmosphere. The fireworks, we sat so close, we had all sorts of byproduct from the fireworks landing on us and raining down on us. It was just liquid. I just thought if somebody lit a match, we were all going to go up in flames. But regardless, it was very exciting. I just, maybe it was a little bit too much for the players. The crowd obviously helped the players to motivate them along, but don't you think it got them a little bit nervous because
I think
we didn't start off well?
I think it maybe made them a little too comfortable because it did it to me. I sat in that stadium next to you. I looked around and I was like, we're going to smoke Wales. So I upped my Super Brew pick. I changed it from 16 to 22, sitting there just before kickoff. So it definitely lulled me into a false sense of security.
I mean, I was ready to run through a brick wall as well with all those pre-game psych-ups and with the fireworks and the Zulu Warriors coming out, running onto the field. I thought, yeah, well, this is going to be hell for Wales. And then obviously, Lew Rees-Sammet goes in to score a try in the opening minutes of the game and just absolutely silenced 51,000 people.
Yeah, I had barely finished telling Opa that he's one of the fastest wingers in the game before he'd gotten the ball and dotted it down. So that was quite quick. But before we get into more of the game, can we also just talk about this false sense of security you have at Loftus when you've got a beer in a cup? Because it's got a stupid magnet at the bottom and we cannot be the only people that succumb to this. That little magnet on the bottom, you touch it with your finger once, twice, push a little too hard, and then your beer's in your slops.
So I think you need to clarify for those that don't know what you're talking about, but they fill these at the beer tents. They take these mugs, right, and they put them down and it fills from the bottom up. So there's a little one-way valve, that very rudimentary, simple one-way valve with the magnet, pushes the liquid in from the bottom, and then the magnet obviously shuts it from going out the other way. And then, you know, you, like you say, you stand there and you just tap it with your finger. You say, what's this little button? You press it and your beer just drops out the bottom. So we surely can't be the only morons that do that.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think that's something that needs to end. It was there for a while, then it went away for 2 years, and then it's back again now. It's a terrible, terrible idea. Not enough beer could save us from that first half, eh, Ronnie?
Yeah, absolutely. 18-3 down at the half. I was convinced we were going to lose that game. I was definitely one of those that, you know, I think most of the crowd were like, well, can you believe it? We are going to lose to a team that's ranked 10 points lower to us on the rankings. And
at home,
yeah, we were hyping up and we were convinced and the bookies were convinced that we were going to absolutely demolish Wales, and they humbled us.
Yep, they really, really humbled us. I must give full credit to them. There's a lot of people going on about how they were in the face of the ref and everything, but I think for the most part, Wales were pretty confrontational compared to what the Box normally are, you know. They got up in our faces, they got under our skin, and credit to them.
They did to us what we do to other teams.
Yeah.
They did to us what we do to other teams, right? You get under their skin, get in their face, you're annoying, you're Faf de Klerk, and you're standing up and you're pressing the buttons and you know, you're trying to annoy players like Murray, Torje, and make them lose focus. And that's what I think Wales absolutely did incredibly well.
Yeah,
and
they got it right.
They got it right. And so we were 18-3 down at halftime, and there were lots of people booing out certain players. And, you know, you could hear the crowd was not happy during that first half.
Yeah, 51,000 silent fans in Loftus. It was unreal watching that happen. You know, we got no ascendancy in the malls. We got a little bit of traction in scrums, thoroughly beaten in the breakdown. And then, yeah, we just had no way of generating go forward ball. Kicking aimlessly. I think we need to have a
stupid
chat about
errors.
Alton.
Yeah, we need to have a talk about Alton. But let's talk about that, right? So something happened when we came on in the second half, and what kicked that off was Philly came onto the field instead of Alton. So Alton had a shocker. He really had a subpar performance.
Yeah, there's no way to mince words about that. What Alton pulled off on Saturday was shocking. Absolutely shocking.
Yeah, it just didn't play to our strengths. And I'll circle back to a young Elton later on in the podcast. But it just, first half is a half I'd like to forget. And I think Elton would as well.
Yeah, I think Nick Mallett put it right at the end of the game when he said, you know, that first 40 minutes is the worst we've played since the Alistair Coetzee years. Because it really was shocking. I honestly as well thought, sitting there, I was going to watch Wales win their first test in South Africa.
It was eye-opening for sure.
A point I made last week, and I want to hear feedback from you on it now, is Franco Mostert at flank. Before I get into that, I have to say I highly rate him as a player, excellent player, but he is not the kind of player you want at flank. He doesn't have that extra oomph and insertion into the game, and especially in a situation where you're missing like a Dwayne Vermeulen. It didn't work for me.
Look, I may have to eat my words as well. I think I'm a big Franco Mostert fan, and I agree he's a great player. But, Peter Steph de Toy, we were also against him coming over onto, taking the 7 jersey after playing lock, and we thought he's a lock. He's not a loose forward, and he proved us all wrong. I think Mostert can play flank in an absolute worst-case scenario.
Yes.
But he's more of a lock, absolutely. So fair enough, I agree.
And then, good to see, actually, now that you say it, Peter Steph is back this weekend. So that'll be lucky to see. Shout out here to Damian Willemse. What an animal, eh? What a beast.
Absolutely.
Damian, well done. You won that game for the box. Ice in your veins to kick that kick over at the end. And all around, excellent performance. Number of good catches under the high ball. Ran well with the ball. Made his tackles. Very, very impressed with him.
Look, there's always going to be people that are pro certain players and then anti certain players. I think I was one of those. I was a little bit uncertain about Damian Willemse. I thought, he's moments of brilliance, fantastic, but who's also had moments of brilliance is Kerwin Bosch and players like these that have shown that have had these brilliant moments, but have been so inconsistent and just really over the long term, they kind of just don't fit the bill. They don't suit game plans. They don't step up. They don't step up and handle those clutch moments. But I thought Damian Willemse, well done, man. In all honesty, I think this is somebody we need to now mold for the next however many years. He's going to be a fantastic resource for the Springboks as a utility back, and possibly even if we decide to go down the route of making him an established and our regular fullback.
It brings me great sadness to say this. I really am. But I think Damian Willemse's performance on Saturday likely ended the career of Frans Steyn.
Yeah, I had a conversation with a colleague today who mentioned that Frans Steyn is not the Frans Steyn that we used to know. And he's still a good player, but he's not that exceptional player that we want him to be. And I think you're probably right here. Damian Willemse has usurped him as the new utility back that we can use in the Springboks. So why beat around the bush? Let's develop him. Let's put Frans Steyn there as a mentor for him for the next year or so. And maybe include Frans Steyn in a World Cup squad, possibly for next year, as that guy that's going to bring Gius and
experience
team,
like two World Cup trophies like a Skulpritz. You're right there, Ronnie. You're very, very right there. But it would be sad if that is the case. I mean, the last international game Frans played was the test against Wales last year. And don't forget, he won man of the match. And then also a player that just needs a mention here because he was uncharacteristically off his game on Saturday was Faf de Klerk.
Yeah.
He struggled with his service. He was in the players' faces sometimes, then he was not. He really blew hot and cold, but definitely his service was a bit of a concern for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think his combination with Elton just didn't come off very well. The two erratic players, but I'll make a mention of that a little bit later on as well. Faf, he was a little bit off of his game. But look, good to see in the Springbok, this team this week, we've got two different scrum offs. People will disagree or agree with whatever, but those scrum offs also need an opportunity to for some game time.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ronnie. Well, since we're talking now about the team for this weekend, the Boks are facing Wales down in Bloemfontein. Should we take a look through the team like we did last week, starting with the tight five?
Yeah, absolutely. So the tight five, Thomas the Tank, Joseph Dweba, Trevor Nyokani, Eben Etzebeth, and Marvin Ori. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Thomas, huge unit. He's about 140 kilos. So, and Wales lost Francis now to injury off that concussion that he suffered on the weekend. So they've got an even younger front row to face us this week. Thomas the Tank, deserving of a start. Trevor Nyokane comes in. He was the starting tight end for much of the season last year. And then Joseph Dweba, I think this is his second cap. So exciting front row. And then, Eben Etzebeth, Marvin Ori reuniting their school partnership. And Ori actually debuted alongside Etzebeth last year. So,
yeah, I don't have a massive problem with 1-5, really. I thought maybe Lewitt probably deserved another go this week. After I thought he had a brilliant game last week, so I would have liked to have seen him in there. I don't know if he could have taken out Eben, because they don't necessarily play exactly the same roles, but good on Marvin Ori getting an opportunity, a run there. Trevor Nyokani, yeah, he just needs to, we just hope he doesn't go down, you know, like he does usually.
Maybe a Malcolm Marks, you know, he also deserves a start.
But I agree he deserves a start, but Malcolm fits that role at 16 so incredibly well. And I think Joseph Dweba is going to replicate what Bongi does, which is hurt you and be so incredibly annoying and abrasive for 50 to 60 minutes of the game. And just when you've finally seen the back of Bongi / Joseph Dweba in this week's game, you come someone like Malcolm Marks, which is just going to smile at you and say, I'm going to take every bloody ball that you have as an exhausted player who's just had to fight the likes of Joseph Dweba / Bongi, because I honestly see them as two incredibly physical and abrasive players.
And this will delight you, Ronnie, because I'm about to call out the Stormers and Stormers fans right now, because I read an article today from the Stormers claiming that they have so many number of Springboks, and they included Joseph Dweba in that list because he has signed for them for next season. So
no, man.
Just putting it on the record, then Eben Etzebeth is a Shark already.
Well, absolutely. So I think you're spot on there. That's it. The Stormers are taking liberties with that. I can't claim to have Joseph play, but just yet.
I am extremely excited by this loose trio, Ronnie.
I know you like this loose trio because of one particular player. I think especially that just puts the icing on the cake for you. But the 6-7-8 is Marcel Kutsia, Peter Steptoe, and Evan Ruiz. So tell me why you like this loose trio.
This is going to be a bombardment of the rucks. I mean, just look at the power there. You've got Peter Steptoe, who is going to wreak havoc running with the ball. You've got Marcel Kutsia, who just doesn't run out of energy. And then you've got Ivan Ruiz, who's a man mountain himself, running from eight. There is so much speed in that loose trio. I think that they're heavily going to overwhelm Wales at the breakdown. I think Wales need to start Josh Navidi. They have to have something to counter that.
Are you done now? Can I add my 2 cents?
Yes, Ronald, you can.
Well, fair enough. So I think with all the injuries between Marcel Kutsia and Peter Steptoe, they could probably combine to create one human, one completely functional human. But I think Marcel Kutsia is, like you said, you know, he's performed well in the URC for the Blue Bulls. And, you know, he's a veteran. He's been there before. So good to see him there. Actually, I'm not too fazed by that. I'm a little bit concerned about Peter Steptoe. And I'll tell you why. Because if you take somebody who's been injury prone like Peter Steptoe and you just throw him into a very physical game, you know, no doubt it's going to be physical against Wales. You toss him in as a starting player against Wales. That's looking for trouble. In all honesty, I would like to slowly introduce him. Bring him on the bench. Give him 20 minutes. Give him 10 minutes and slowly introduce him to the likes of a physical team like Wales.
I don't know if I agree with you, Ronnie, because, I mean, he's played a full season in Japan. He only had a shoulder niggle last week. I don't think
there's a big difference between Japan and Wales, my friend. There's from a physicality aspect, there's a big difference.
No, I think he's going to go all right. And I think he's an absolute animal. So very keen to see him back in the green and gold.
For sure. So I think for me, from the, we've just spoken about 1-8. I would have liked to have seen this 1-8 pack actually start last week or the last game. I think had we lost with a team like this, that would have been one thing where we barely beat Wales with the team that we did have. You know, I think you could have taken a team like this, possibly won, possibly lost, and then, you know, tweaked this team, you know, take on this week. But, you know, Evan Ruiz, while I'm getting a shot, that's amazing. Well done. So then we move on to the halfback pairing. So that's Jaden Hendricks and Andre Pollard. What are your thoughts on Jaden and Andre?
Listen, if Pollard even gets one conversion over, he's better than what we got from Alton last weekend. So that was always expected from me. Jaden Hendricks, I guess he deserves an opportunity. You know, he scored on debut last year. I do feel like his replacement on the bench, Grant Williams, is the better of the two. But I don't hold any real contentions about him getting a crack at 9.
Yeah, I think I agree Jaden Hendricks might be a little bit more flashy and might have some flair, but I find Grant Williams to be a little bit more stable and calm and would make an excellent combination with Andre. But look, Andre's in the picture. Andre's going to marshal that back line. It's good to see him back. I hope he also just, all we can hope for as a bunch of South African supporters is that these guys don't get injured, especially someone like Andre.
Yeah. And then let's do back three first. Apalele Fassi on the left wing, Kirkley Arendse on the right, and Warwick Galant at fullback. Quite an inexperienced back three, hey?
Hey, a little bit of a question mark with Apalele Fassi at wing.
It seems like the coaches have a bit of an issue with his positioning on defense at fullback. So I think they're trying to get him accustomed to test rugby on the wing while they work on his field positioning. But yeah, not a wing, but very keen to see his game-breaking ability.
Look, for sure, he's played wing before, and I just felt that he's performed better at fullback, so why are we playing this guy out of position? We have other players that can play wing, so we don't need to be experimenting like this, and maybe try Apalele at 15, although maybe they looked at it and said Apalele needs some game time, but so does Warwick Galant, so how can we accommodate both of them? So they found a solution to including both of them. Kirkley Arendse.
So the interesting thing for me here is we know Wales is a team that relies heavily on kicking. And have you realized that our back three, the both wings and fullback, are in fact three fullbacks.
Three fullbacks. That's true.
That makes it interesting as well.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how both Apalele and Kirkley Arendse. You'll notice that over the last couple of years, we've had our wings cut in and try and cut off that outside, that pass to the outside man. We've always, quite often we've thrown our hands in the air and said, oh, Mapimpi, why aren't you staying on your wing? Why do you keep cutting in? And, you know, this is the strategy from the Springboks to go in and cut off that final pass. So it'll be interesting how the likes of Kirkley Arendse and Apalele Fassi handle that. And are they going to get their timing right, or are they honestly going to cause an overlap against them? Are they going to be able to defend that as fullbacks, as traditional fullbacks, right? So are they going to be able to handle that? Let's see. Warwick Galant, I'm happy for him to get some game time. He's obviously played incredibly well in the URC, so good to see him there. And then I suppose we've got the last two positions in the starting lineup. So that's Jesse Creel at outside and Andre Esterhazen at inside.
Andre the Giant, go. Hey? Yo, Andre the Giant. I'm super keen to see him jamming it at 12. Less so about Jesse Creel. I think this team would have been insane had it been Esterhazen and Am in the centers. I wouldn't have had a single complaint about the starting side.
A little bit of stability as well, because this is a vastly different team. But to maybe have brought in Am there at outside just to bring a little bit of stability and calm in the back line. Because I think with Jaden Hendricks and Andre Esterhazen, either side of Andre Pollard, this could either work really well, or it can go very pear-shaped. True. So you've got Jaden Hendricks, you've got Andre Esterhazen, and Andre Esterhazen is known for passing. So is Andre, who's a big physical 10 as well, he's just going to have to distribute out to Jesse Creel and to Warwick Galant and onto our wings. Yeah. So how's that going to happen? I don't know. Let's see.
You know, you mentioned Ivan Etzebeth being retained in the starting lineup. He is the caller of the lineout, so I assume that that's why he's there, which is why I find it interesting that they didn't select again, because he's actually our defensive captain. You know, is Jesse Creel assuming that role now or what? That leaves me a little bit worried, especially after how those two quick tries Wales scored last weekend.
You make a brilliant point there, because is definitely the one that marshals the backline, calls him over, moves him aside, and also has that free role of himself, you know, positioning himself in a way to defend things that other people don't necessarily see. So who's taking that role? Because it can't be Andre. Andre's fly off and captain. Yeah. So that must be Jesse Creel then, if I look at that team.
Yeah, that must be. So all in all, 14 of the 15 players starting this coming weekend did not start in last weekend's fixture. So that's a huge number of changes. Looking at the bench, you've got Malcolm Marks, Ntutuku Mchunu, and Vincent Koch in the front row. Only a change from Mchunu there. Ruan Nokia, Reinhard Alstadt, Dion Ferrie, Grant Williams, and Damian Willemse.
I'm excited to see Dion Ferrie potentially get his cap.
Imagine facing the starting loose trio and then having Dion Ferrie coming on the field afterwards. I would hate it.
I mean, he hasn't got enough eyes for the number of black eyes that he gets. You know? It's unbelievable.
No, that's true, Ronnie. It is incredible. So very, very keen to see that. I'm quite excited to see Rowan Nokia get a chance. You know, he played every single minute of the URC for the Bulls. So I think he's a workhorse as well. And good to see him get his opportunity before Arkia Snyman returns.
If Arkia Snyman returns.
Yeah, well, I'm not the pessimist that you are. But yes, ultimately that is the case. And then, yeah, Ronnie, you and me are heading down to Bloem, heading down early Saturday morning.
One of the things why, for just for the listeners, why we started this podcast was because we wanted to establish something that would send us to go and watch more rugby. And now we've done this podcast. We have no choice whether we like it or not, but we have to go to Bloemfontein this coming weekend and watch the Springboks because, you know, it's becoming our job now.
And I'm very, very excited for that road trip, Ronnie. That'll be lekker. But what are your predictions for this weekend? And this time, I'm going to make mine now without the emotion.
Okay, look, so there's obviously I like to wait for the Welsh team to come out before I make my predictions. We're recording this on it. What is it? Today's Tuesday, so I prefer to make my Super Brew calls a little bit closer to the time. But if I look at this team and I look at what happened last weekend, I'm not going to go out and say we're gonna clap Wales by 19 points like I think I did last weekend. I'm going to be a little bit more conservative and say there's a lot of new players here, a lot of interesting matchups that could or could not work. You know, Bloemfontein's grass is very hard and ground is very hard and Bloemfontein faithful. How are they going to perform? But I'm going to be a little bit more conservative here and say South Africa by 4.
I'm going to go South Africa by 9. I just feel like our loose trio is going to prove the point of difference in this fixture. And Wales, hopefully you don't listen to this podcast, Wayne Pivak, because if you do, you're going to start Josh Navidi. Don't do that. We don't.
And then for all we know, they start the fireworks at the stadium and we both just up our Super Brew predictions. But let's not fall for that trap.
I'm not going to fall for that again, Ronnie. But yeah, it wasn't only us that had all the fun this weekend. There's been rugby all over the bloody show. Games taking place everywhere. Literally, you could have sat from about 3 o'clock in the morning here and watched rugby until midnight when Argentina finished playing Scotland. So should we look at some of the other games?
For sure. Let's jump right into it. So first game being Fiji Tonga. I mean, it's a little bit sad that Tonga, you know, it sucks when a team gets 0 points, right? Not even a penalty or any opportunity for that. So Fiji absolutely dominated that. And look, we can only hope that the likes of Tonga and Samoa and Fiji with their inclusion with the various teams into Super Rugby can only get better. I think that's they can only get better and they will get better. So
yeah,
let's keep our finger on the pulse with respect to Tonga. But, you know, dominant performance by Fiji and well done to them.
Yeah, and I mean, Tonga had Israel Folau turn out for them, Charles Pietau, Malachi Fekitoa. And I have to apologize to Bernadine, who actually listens to the pod. I gave her some terrible advice to back Tonga for that game.
So she listened to your advice because I actually gave her advice as well with, you know, very, very strong nudges in different directions because I kind of knew where she was going. And I was like, no, you listen, you got to go Fiji. And I still saw that she went for Tonga. So was that your doing? So she thought that Nick was better than Ronnie is what you're saying.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have to apologize for that one. And what makes it even worse is that I picked Fiji. I did you dirty there, sorry.
Honestly, Bernadine, but you know what, Bernadine, I'll never give you help again if you do listen to this, but sure. Carry on.
Yeah, then we take a look at the All Blacks absolutely demolishing Ireland 42-19. I predicted
so you backed Ireland, yeah. So you backed Ireland, and I know we spoke about on the podcast with all the COVID and whatnot up in, you know, uncertainty in the All Black camp, that Ireland could potentially win this first one and then lose the next two. But Ireland's performance against the Maori All Blacks is not good. Granted, yes, you could consider them both second string teams, Maori All Blacks and the team that played against the Maori All Blacks. But if that's the state of your second string team, you know, it has to present itself in the same to the same degree in your first team. So I just thought the All Blacks were going to win. So I backed them and I got that one.
Yeah, that, you know, Ireland scored first quickly. Peter O'Mahony and Dan Sheehan had incredible games. But yeah, I don't know why I thought anyone would beat the All Blacks but the Springboks. So well done, New Zealand, on that one. I now believe it will be a series whitewash and I'm backing New Zealand this coming weekend.
Smart.
Bit of a tougher one to call. Wallabies 30, England 28.
Well, that game changed a lot. I mean, if you looked at sort of our Super Brew pool that we had, you know, just it fluctuated. At one point, you know, the guy that picked Australia by 17 was winning, and then at the next point it was England who came back right at the death end, and the guys who picked Australia by 2 were getting the bonus points. So incredible fluctuations throughout that game. You know, I think what were they, 6 all at halftime, and then boom, something happened in the second half for both teams, especially from the Wallabies, a little bit more consistent in the second half, and then England with some big performances right at the death there.
Yeah, and I mean, unfortunately, Quade Cooper getting injured shortly before the game, having to be substituted there, and yeah, shoving a fly off in starting, telling him 6 minutes before kickoff, listen, dude, you're starting. Very well done to Australia, and I'm sure Eddie Jones is furious, which brings me great joy.
Great joy as well. But yeah. So then we move on to Argentina v Scotland. Argentina taking that one over Scotland.
Yeah, Argentina 26, Scotland 18. Scotland, I think, paying the price for not taking Finn Russell and Stuart Hogg. Obviously, we don't know what went on there in the Six Nations, but it seems like Scotland's a bit of an unhappy camp at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought Argentina, I predicted that Argentina would take the win. I thought it would be a lot closer, although, you know, it's, what is that? Only, let's do a quick math here. That's only 8 points, so it's not that much, scoring a bit. But I thought that Scotland would put a little bit of a better performance in.
Yeah, you know, what happened to the Scotland team that we were raving about in February when they beat England in the Calcutta Cup at Murrayfield? You know, that seems to have all been lost. It was an interesting weekend's rugby, Ronnie, and most of these fixtures are repeated this weekend. So we're going to take a quick look through our Super Brew picks for everybody.
Right then.
What have you got for the first one? I'll let you shed the light on the Samoa-Tonga game.
Samoa v Tonga. I think this will be a little bit closer than the Fiji v Tonga matchup, but I'm going to go with Samoa by 12.
I've got Samoa by 13. So we're pretty close on that one. Fiji versus Australia, eh?
Yeah, it's another interesting matchup, but I think Fiji by 1.
I've got Fiji by 14. I'm expecting them to get some good tries in there. Japan versus France.
Well, I'm going to back France by 18.
Are you looking at my picks here, or what are you doing, Ronnie? I've also got France by 18. New Zealand versus Ireland.
So I don't know whether it's either going to be another blowout or semi-blowout by New Zealand against Ireland. I'll be a little bit conservative here and say New Zealand by 9.
I've got them by 8. So we're very close on that one too. Australia versus England.
So, another tough one. I think this really is, these are two incredibly closely matched teams here. Probably the most out of any of the other internationals being played, and it could really go either way. But home field advantage, you know, the golden rule, when in doubt, pick the home team. I'm going to pick Australia by 4.
I've got them by 2. Springboks versus Wales.
So I really, really, really want to say South Africa is going to clap Wales by 19. But, you know, I don't know. It's going to be a lot closer. It's going to be South Africa, I don't know, by 9. I think I may have said earlier in the call something else. But, you know, as it stands, I'm going to make South Africa by 9. Well, subject to what the Wales release in terms of their team as well. So, but for now, South Africa by 9.
I've also got the box down by 9. And then Argentina-Scotland.
Argentina-Scotland, based on last week's performance or Saturday's performance, I'm going to just continue with the home team. Scotland will make a number of changes, I'm sure, and they'll come with a new strategy. But Argentina by, let's say, 4.
I've got Argentina by 6. Yeah, Ronnie. And then just a quick look at the world rankings now that we've wrapped up that game. You know, you mentioned it to me before we started recording that the Springboks can't earn any world ranking points from this series against Wales. They can certainly lose a lot of them, though. So don't.
They can lose a lot.
Yeah, because Wales are ranked 9th overall. Springboks remain in first. New Zealand kicked Ireland down, and France is now in 3rd place. So New Zealand back up to 2nd behind the box, and not very far at all. Hey, we're on 90.61. They're on 89.72. So
yeah, it's a little bit concerning, though, if, you know, we cannot gain any points. So whatever we have here, that's the highest we're going to get. We can't gain more points. We can certainly lose, and we can lose a lot. It will be an expensive loss if we lose against Wales in terms of the points. But New Zealand can gain points from their matches against Ireland. So if both teams win, so, you know, if New Zealand win 3 from 3 and we win 3 from 3 as well, New Zealand could take that top spot, though. Purely based on their competition being better ranked than ours.
This is true. And England dropping down to sixth place. If England lose to Australia this weekend and Argentina beat Scotland, England are going to be ranked seventh.
This brings look, we've also joy. Listen, we've also been seventh though. So, you know, we've seen some very hard times as Springbok supporters. So
yeah,
let's not jinx anything here. Let's just kind of skim over all of this and move on to the next topic.
Yeah, fair enough, Ronnie. So what are you doing for us today? We're ranting, we're raving. I'm expecting a rave because we had a lack of time on Saturday, but I know you, so what are we in for?
All right, so I don't really know if this is a rant or a rave, but I'm going to ask you to just refrain from cutting me off there like you like to do and just listen to what I have to say here. I've got something to say.
Sorry,
so,
what?
So please mute your mic there. You know, over the seasons, I have often said that I believe in certain players when the absolute vast majority and consensus of the rugby fandom vehemently disagree with me. I've often maintained that Kerwin is a great player. He has shown moments of sheer brilliance. But yes, after many seasons, I believe we and he need to go back to the drawing board because something is not working. And this isn't just for Kerwin. I just use Kerwin as an example, but this extends to Elton as well. This past weekend, someone shouted at me and asked how I can possibly think Elton is a good player. And I believe I need to unpack this just a little bit more.
We're well into a rant here, Ronnie.
I've asked you to shut your mouth, please. As South Africans, our happiness is inexplicably linked to the performance of our rugby teams and especially our national rugby team, the Springboks. People all around the world maintain that we are an insufferable bunch of fans. And yes, I can understand why. But this is purely because we are so incredibly vocal and passionate about our teams, selection strategies, and game day performances. We have absolutely no qualm to express ourselves in the strongest terms on any public forum. However, we can often lose sight of the big picture, which we must really try not to do as South Africans and throw the baby out of the bathwater. We can all agree Elton had a subpar performance on the weekend, but can we honestly say that the scenario that he found himself in would not have transpired in anything other than a subpar performance? Can we truly say that? If we take a step back, we need to ask what the big picture plan is. I believe Elton's performance can be attributed to two things. Number one, Elton has not had sufficient and quality game time marshalling a team at 10 in a very long time, both for the Springboks and also for his domestic rugby after an injury, and also the fact that his team was eliminated before playoffs. That's point number one. Point number two, Elton's style no longer suits that of the Springboks. He is chaotic. Not necessarily a bad thing, but it doesn't work well when you have a chaotic Faf de Klerk playing at 9 as well. And he could be flashy with no-look passes in a free-flowing and dynamic game. This just simply does not gel with the physical and defensively dominant, brutal and momentum-based strategy that we use as South Africans. We milk this strategy week in and week out. So Elton's unfortunately does not gel well with how the Springboks strategy is. Does this make him a bad player? I do not think so. It just makes him incredibly unsuited to what we need at a 10 for the Springboks. Perhaps we need to, sooner rather than later, have Elton step into a mentoring role, assisting in developing the new 10.
Mentoring what, Ronald?
Assisting and developing a new 10 to step in as backup for Pollard. Because as it stands, we are in real trouble if Pollard goes down with a long-term injury. We just simply do not have a 10 that suits the Springbok strategy and the Springbok take on how rugby should be played. Listen, so, yeah. Elton, I'm sorry, my friend, but maybe your time is up.
That is the most worked up I've ever seen you, Ronald. You got a lot off your chest there. But how can you even consider having Elton mentor someone to be Pollard's backup when he can't even do it himself?
Look, Elton's seen some hard times. He knows what it feels like to be down and out. And he can absolutely, he's been in that Springbok camp for long enough now to know how it works. He can say to a player, look, you're going to, you know, the strategy that they're asking you to play, this is this and that, and you need to understand this is how the Springboks work, and maybe encourage them and help them with kicking and whatnot. I go back to what's that eighth man that used to play, Bobby Skinstad. Go back to what he said, where he said, if there is a role, and I know you laugh, I can see you laughing there, if there is a role that you could foresee me
fulfilling your squad.
if there is a role that you can foresee me fulfilling in your squad to contribute in any sort of way, I'll do that. So, you know, maybe Elton needs to do exactly that.
Yeah, well, I'm going to bite my tongue further on this topic. I've made my views very public. Ronnie, that was definitely a rant. There's no question about it.
I thought it was well-structured, my argument. I even wrote it down.
So, Ronnie, what do you have from our Super Brew pool? Who's winning us? Who's winning it from us there?
All right, so we've got a July International Super Brew pool running. I think Nick will post what the pool name is on social media and let you know what all of that's about.
Or can you use edit swab in a sentence, Ronald?
So edit swab. No, I'll think of it. I'll come with a clever response next week. All right. So as mentioned, Nick has got three rugby ball lights, which I'll tell you all about in a moment. But the top three that finish in our pool will be getting that, provided that they like and subscribe on Instagram and Facebook. So definitely we'll have a look at your Super Brew finish, and the top three that are also that have liked and subscribed Instagram, Facebook, you will be getting those rugby ball lights sent to you, and that you are living in South Africa, I believe. So we'll start off at the bottom. In third place, we've got Jade Miller, aka Jade, who's on 12.5. points, separating. There's actually a number of people on 12.5, but the total differential margin separates them. In second place, we've got Duduzo Makoba, aka Stu, also on 12.5. As I mentioned, better total differential margin. In first place, we've got Anton Murray, aka Anton, who is on 12.75 points. And Anton's three calls, which I think it's important to unpack, he got three spot-on calls. So he got maximum points for three of his calls, which is, you know, those bonus points are going to help you.
That's pretty impressive.
Grand Slam. He got the two Grand Slam points for 8 out of 8 wins, but he only earned 4 margin points. So only half the games did he get the margin right. So I think those bonus points and the Grand Slam points made up for his lack of margin points. But well done, Anton Murray. Let's see if you're a one-week wonder, and if you can retain top spot, or somebody else is going to usurp you at that position.
Yeah, guys, so smash that like button, and you could win with us if you keep participating in the Super Group pool.
But because we host the show, we also get to always mention ourselves, and I thought this is an important segment to add in every podcast. This week's not going my way; it is going Nick's way. So,
is it really?
Nick, aka Nick, aka the rugby punted on in the July Internationals punted group, whatever it's called, you are 95th, and I, Ronnie, aka Ronnie, am sitting on 167th. So I may be beating you in one of these other pools that we play with our close friends, but in the big pool that seems to matter, and for us to win these lights, you 95th and I'm 167th, so I got some work to do to catch up, but I'm sure it'll change. That's why I'm mentioning it now, so that I can mention it later when I am beating you.
Yeah, Ronnie, well, I'm glad. I didn't know I was in the lead, so you've given me some good news this evening. Jumping straight into Saturday then, you know, we've changed it up a bit for the internationals. I'm going to be covering one of the debutants or potential debutants for the weekend, and I chose Dion Ferree to cover, purely because it's actually incredibly impressive how he has reached where he has. He is 35 years old, and to have gotten your first Springbok call-up at that age and now to be making your debut is honestly an incredible achievement. Just to show you how far back we have to look to when he started his career, it was 2006 he started for Western Province in the Stormers, playing along guys like Skalk Berger and Andries Becker and all these guys that are retired from the game, and here Dion Ferree still is. He was with Province from 2006 to 2014, earned 174 caps for them there. Then he went on to Lyon from 2014 to 2019, further 91 caps. Played for Grenoble for 2 years, 42 caps. So in total, Dion Ferree has played 327 first-class games in his career before he got to the stage of a Springbok call-up. But even more impressive for me is that he scored 295 points. Yes, and he primarily played at hooker. That's
insane. So what you're saying, how old is he now? Have you mentioned that?
35.
So what you're saying, for you and me, there's a chance we could still play Springboks.
There's a chance, but we need to get 327 games behind us and 295 points.
No, oh, it's only like three professional games a week.
Yeah. Dion Ferree, very impressed by you, backing you all the way. I'm sure your family's so keen to see you. And he's just signed a 2-year extension with Western Province and the Stormers. So he's going to be around for a while still.
Yeah, good on him. I mean, I'm very chuffed for him. Well done. I mean, if every person that plays rugby at some point wishes they and imagines himself playing for Springboks, and he's going to get a shot. May have been late in his career, but you know what? Don't give up and become a Springbok.
Lucky everybody, Shot, for joining us this week. We were super excited to cover the Bok game, and we're very, very keen to head down to Bloemfontein. Catch us here every Wednesday. Ronnie and I will take you through the games, take you through what's coming up in the weekend. And yeah, check you next week, Wednesday.